You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for August 1st, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of The Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. And we're streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Reset Your Recluttered Space. The assignment was to address one area of your home that has a tendency to get recluttered. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who processed an item of reclutter this week. Please let us know in the comments. YouTube viewer L Major had this to say in response to last week's tittle. This is not exactly a tittle report, but it's definitely related to the topic.
Along the same vein.
L Major said, "My decluttering journey has proven to be very much like my weight loss journey. I find it relatively easy to get rid of stuff or weight, but then comes the harder part of making different choices and setting myself up to successfully maintain the progress I've made. In both areas, decluttering and weight loss, I have experienced slippage. We need to shift our thinking and form better habits. It is all just part of the effort needed to stay on the path of the life we want to be living."
And as the commenter has pointed out, keeping weight off and maintaining decluttered space both depend on figuring out how to shift our thinking and cultivate new habits that support the goals we're trying to achieve. It's important to recognize that maintenance is a different journey than the initial declutter project. If you don't want to redo your decluttering project over again every few months or every few years, then figuring out a maintenance strategy is the important next step in your decluttering journey. Thanks for sharing with us. Appreciate it.
Angel says, "I've been keeping my kitchen island clear, which is a task."
Yay!
That is a biggie. We had an island in our previous the apartment we lived in before we moved into this house.
Right.
And there were two surfaces on the entry to the house, a little desk space and then the island. And you can guess which one filled up first, you know, the closest one to the door.
Right.
And then the island next. So anytime somebody to come over or we were just trying to get a handle on it, those were the first two spaces to deal with.
Oh, how funny. Think about the kitchen is so active. Like you're in there making meals all the time, or you're in there procuring food in whatever way. So there's constant movement in the kitchen, and having it get backed up in there just means it impedes you every day. And that's annoying.
Marsh reports, "This picture, the great picture behind Gail, had me reset all my power packs and cords. A 2-day project." Thank you.
I'm sure. But that is like, that made me, when that picture showed up, I was like, oh my God, that is just a fire waiting to set off right there.
Yeah. I hope that image isn't too triggering for anyone. Because it's a little, especially
good,
how
good reminder
how the pink extension cord, the grounding plug of the three.
Is sticking out.
In the air.
Yeah.
Serving no function whatsoever.
Firefighters would object to that.
Jane reported, "Gmail tends to reclutter. It's not my primary account, and I tend to not pay any attention to it. I went back through it this week and did a little cleanup.
That's good. Good for you.
Several months ago, I had gone through it and deleted and unsubscribed a lot. That made it easier this time.
Oh, good. So you saw the results filter down. That's excellent. Good for you.
Well, and that sort of makes that point. A lot of comments on YouTube this week talked about how do the decluttering once, and then the next time you take a look, you see different things.
Right. There's more to deal with. There's more that you're willing to let go of. There's more that you can think about the second time or the third time and finally release. Yeah, definitely.
Kara said, I think it was here that I heard, would it be easier to do X later? No, I've been thinking about that all week and I have been taking care of dishes, little messes, et cetera, right away. I'm really happy with the results.
That's a great habit to get into. We all want to say, I'll deal with that later. I'll do that later. And we say it often and we say it around the mail a lot. I don't want to deal with that now. I'll deal with it later. But it does accumulate quickly if you always say, I'll do it later. And so recognizing that you can make big headway and really impact your environment by saying, oh, I'm not going to do that later. I'm going to do this small thing now and take 5 minutes now. And then you've accumulated, if you do that several times a day and you accumulate it over a week and you have greatly impact how much backup, how much backlog, how much ends up on the island in the kitchen, right? Like you've already thinned out the collection. And so it's a habit that can really impact your day-to-day life and keep it from getting too dense in there is my point. Good job. Good thing to figure out.
Here's M's Tittle report. I discovered that the kitchen clutter is because projects don't have a place to be done. The projects involve cooking from scratch or are projects that require water.
And so you end up in the kitchen so that you can have access to the water or to cook from scratch. And then you don't have any place to do that. Very good point. All right. So, we should talk about how to make you a project space. and maybe it's just that when you're going to go do a project, part of the project is to set up the project, do the project, and break down the project and put it away. In order, because you either because of space constraints, the space is too small, that you can't have a project area or a project surface or a place on a shelf or a corner of a cabinet where you can't keep projects then that are in the middle of being done, then you have to set up, do the project and break down every time you work on it in order to keep control of the kitchen, basically, or have the projects not be in the way the rest of the time. And so creating a parking space for those projects, wherever that might be, and maybe you have to be pretty creative about it, but creating a parking space for that project, since you've identified it as an impediment, then figuring out where you want to park in between is a worthwhile thing to do, because you're going to keep doing those kind of projects and you're going to keep wanting to be able to do them. And so let's make a space to park them in between, so it's not in the way when you're not doing them.
I understand that that issue, because our place is so small that I do most of my crafty stuff right here in the same place where I do most of my worky stuff. And so I'm less inclined to paint than I am to draw or use other dry stuff, because I don't want to have to bring some water into this area that where it would be a little
where your computer
to clean up.
Is and
where my computer right? is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that.
I do put my laptop in a safe place before I get into anything non-work related, but even so it just makes me less inclined to do those things.
Because it's an added step to manage over there.
Yeah. A dedicated craft space would be nice. That's definitely on the list for next place we live.
When I do organize craft rooms, if somebody is into crafts that require water, I always make a wet station and a dry station, because never the twain should meet most of the time. but what you need for a wet station is completely different than what you need for a place that's going to be dry. And even using glue is different than using water. Anybody that does felting, for instance, you're in a bucket of water. Like there's a lot of water involved. When you're painting, then there's lots of wet things and lots of water involved. And so managing that water and the use of it so that A, it doesn't destroy your work table and B, it doesn't get on anything that's not supposed to have water on it is an important thing to manage in your space. And so depending on the crafts that you do, you might be using a lot of water and you might not. So yeah. And I can see in your house currently, Ed, you'd have to go and like sit on the kitchen island to have a flat surface and to be having water to paint.
Yeah. I could work at the bar, but it's not ideal. That comfortable. And the lighting isn't that great either.
No, right. True that.
It's casual lighting.
Right.
Naomi reports, I have cleaned a few of the grimy surfaces in the kitchen. Not all, but it's a start.
Hey, one at a time, baby.
It could only happen because I started storing small appliances elsewhere than on the counters so I could keep the counters clean more easily. So I had energy left to go a bit further.
Good job. That's very good. You don't realize how much energy you're giving up to fighting all the things that are in the way, right? And so if you cleared out some of your space so it's easier to clean, then you can work more on the cleaning part. Good job.
Ginger says, I'm pretty good to keep hotspots cleared. Mail, email, and photos on my phone and iPad are dealt with almost daily. But our biggest mess is in hubby's domain. I'll be tackling it this week, my monthly zone. Thinking about getting cubicle shelving for his stuff.
Go team, go.
Right?
Do some negotiation first before you plow in. You know, make sure that you don't trigger him saving everything in response to your throwing things away. So have some negotiation about what he's okay with you dealing with and not dealing with, and promote conversation between you about, okay, so there's this here and how do you want to handle it and what do you want to do? And then I'll go do it. But let him participate in the conversation so that he's not resentful or irritated by your intervention.
Well,
and doesn't resist you coming back again another time.
I know that from previous reports, Ginger and her husband definitely have collaborated.
Good. That's excellent.
Collaborate. I think she does maybe the lion's share of the heavy lifting.
Right.
But, there's
a conversation about it. That's
yeah. Good. There's definitely buy-in on the master plan.
Excellent.
Anita reports, yesterday I finished separating the last carton of photos into decades from 1930 through the 2000s, plus a large file tray of portrait photos removed from their frames for later scanning.
Yay!
And two boxes of memorabilia, trophies, awards, etc. to take photos of. When I get done digitizing, I will probably be so old I won't remember what I've done, but my family will.
Good job. I know that is a massive project that you're working on, and I'm so excited to hear that you got through all of the decades first pass and made your piles, and good job. You're going to be super happy with the results at the end.
Ginger added, always negotiating with hubs. It Good. Won't work if I don't.
Exactly. That's my point. You can't just take over somebody's stuff and expect them to stand there quietly.
Right.
It ain't going to happen that way.
All right. Let's get on to our main topic.
Okay.
Clutter jeopardizes our relaxation, comfort, productivity, and the pride and enjoyment we get from our homes. But it can also present real threats to the health and safety of our families and guests. Today, we're going to uncover the dangers lurking in our clutter and offer tips for optimizing space for safety, mobility, health, and ease of access.
We talk all the time about how clutter disrupts our lives, affects our comfort and how we enjoy the house, our pride in the house, On the light end, we're inconvenienced by clutter. It's hard to get it from room to room. We have to move a lot of stuff to get what we want. Clutter slows us down and annoys us. But there are circumstances in which clutter becomes a serious threat to your health and well-being. Everybody needs to walk around safely. Rescue teams need to get access to you. And you need to get out in case of a fire or flood. So sometimes clutter prevents those solutions. You may be okay to navigate through the house during the day with adequate light when you're not injured or in any kind of hurry. But what happens when the power's out, or a wildfire is coming towards your house, or the floodwaters are rising? Those haphazard piles could be the difference between getting out safely or not. And all of this is complicated by your mobility. So if you're using a walker or crutches, or you need to brace yourself on something sturdy to get up off the floor, you may not have somebody strong nearby who can get you up. So the slightest thing can make your home ecosystem fail. So today we're going to cover hazards that clutter creates, and from the inconvenient ones to the life-threatening ones, and talk about how you can organize with an eye towards mitigating those risks. And we thought we'd talk about this through the survey results this time. We asked about all kinds of hazards and issues in the house, and the answers were super informative. So there's a list that you guys ranked, that Ed made a list of types of hazards, and you guys ranked them depending on whether they applied in your house or not. And the worst one, the top of the list with 35 people saying this is a problem, was items are stacked or piled on the floor. So having items stacked or piled on the floor is immediately reducing the footprint in the house. It's you've got to be impeding traffic ways that way. If you put something on the floor, then you can't walk on that part of the floor. So you've converted a part of the house from a walkway or living space into a storage space. You've just changed its purpose 100%. And the issue about having things stacked or piled on the floor is there's really a risk of falling here, that things stacked can fall on you if you knock them or bump them. I don't know about you, but when I move around type spaces, you know, I'm carrying a caboose that knocks things off all the time. I'm constantly, you know, catching things on the way by in people's houses because I take up more room than they do in their little pathways. And so
my elbows are a similar danger.
Right. I have the problem with my elbows in the shower too. I seem to knock things down in the shower with my elbows, which is confusing.
Yeah. I almost can't towel off after shower without knocking something to the floor of the bathtub.
I know. And it's so annoying. I hate that so much. It's the one place that I get really mad when stuff gets knocked down for some reason. I don't know why. The fact that I'm wet makes me more irritated about it, but somehow that is a big bother to me. But those things stacked, they're stacked one on top of each other. Invariably, those stacks are, you didn't stack them with a thought to them being stable. No one stacks, you know, the heavy thing on the bottom and the lighter things on the top and the larger things on the bottom and the smaller ones. Nobody stacks with an engineering thought about how well this stack is going to survive. When I see people stack things, it's just like the next thing that they have in their hand goes on the top of the stack. And it doesn't matter whether it's a box that has anything in it, whether it's something that's super heavy, if the tower starts to be tilty or swing or slide, or those stacks that I see are always just so random and no thought is ever put into them being stable. And so they are always precarious and waiting to tip over at the slightest provocation and or collapse because there's an empty box in the middle and they get enough weight on them that suddenly something in the middle collapses from the weight and then it all falls over. So the capacity for all those things that are stacked or piled on the floor to A, fall over, B, fall over on you, or B, fall onto the floor in your pathways is pretty high. And so it's going to be stuff that it's stacked until it's not stacked anymore. And you're the one that's got to navigate around it or get knocked over by it or have to fall and try to get up in the environment of all that stuff around you on the floor. And I think it's a big hazard, just mostly because when people make those stacks, they don't think about making that stack be stable. They just put the next thing on the top. And it's sort of like, you know, when people do the game where they take rocks and they try to stack the rocks up and make it all stand up tall. And, you know, it's like it's a trick to how many rocks can you balance on top of each other before the whole thing falls over. And I think I go into houses sometimes and I'll see this on top of tables a lot. People will have started stacking stuff on a surface, an end table, a coffee table, a kitchen table, a counter, the island, for instance. And they just keep stacking without any concept of whether the way that they're stacking it is going to remain upright when they put this next thing on top of it. And I often walk up and go, okay, that's about to fall over right there. We got to take that apart right now, because if I walk by it, I'm going to knock it over for sure. And so it's something that I have to undo a lot at people's houses, because those stacks are precarious.
Randy says, I swear sometimes I can just stand in a doorway and piles will fall over or things jump off other flat surfaces.
Right. And the truth is, it's probably just that the stacks are so unstable. It doesn't take a lot of vibration to set it off, right? To make it go rolling. And then you have a big pile of mess you have to clean up, right? So yeah, there you go. So 30 respondents said this to our answer. Yes.
Let me add for context, since we didn't calculate percentages, but, these are all, we had 66 responses that people wanted, you know, people acknowledged publicly. So that these numbers are out of the 66.
Right. So 35 for the items stacked on the floor. So that's more than half. And then this one is 30 people. So that's definitely, around half. Surfaces can't be dusted regularly due to clutter. So if you can't go in and reach all of the areas, or if you have a maid that can't come and she can't reach into certain areas or get into certain rooms or get under a table, she can't be vacuuming, she can't be dusting. And so it's going to affect your air quality in the house. First of all, that dust accumulation is only making it harder for everyone in the house to breathe, which is never fun. And you think, oh yeah, the dust is sitting over there, but it's like, yeah, the dust is sitting over there, but the air conditioner is blowing and stirring stuff up, and you are going through the house and you get into the room and you might be stirring stuff up and it's just sitting there waiting to get in your lungs. So the surface is not being dusted is affecting your quality of air, your ability to breathe in the house. And then the other thing that happens is, because the surfaces have dust on them, and after a while it becomes very visible that it hasn't been dusted. You can see the dust accumulating there as on the surfaces. Then it affects your willingness to have visitors in the house. And I think not having visitors in the house, you're now affecting your social life, and you're affecting your the people that come to check on you and make sure that you're okay. there's all kinds of social implications that happen when the dust becomes visible on surfaces, and then you as the homeowner start losing your willingness to let people see that. It feels uncomfortable, and so then you end up not letting people be in the house. They can't check on you. They can't find out, you know, it's affecting your mental health because you're not interacting with people as much. And you know, I think it has a lot of negative results because of that. Dusting a cluttered space is always difficult, but it is also difficult, a challenge, and seems less important. If you can't get to the stuff anyway, then why worry about dusting it? But I think the hazard on the back end is that if you ignore it long enough and it becomes visible enough, then you're really affecting your own air quality. And so it's worth trying to be able to cure that one if you can. 22 people answered this one. There are items that have to be moved to get access to other frequently used items. This one confuses me because I I don't want it to be hard to get the stuff that I use all the time. And so things that prevent me from getting to things that I use all the time annoy me greatly. And so I make sure that that access is fixed, because I find it super annoying to get to have to struggle to get the stuff that I use all the time. So I'm surprised at the level at which my clients tolerate things being in the way of stuff that they have to get to all the time. And I think if those items have to be, if you have to move stuff around to get to things you want all the time, it's slowing you down. First of all, you can't do what you're trying to do quickly. And then secondly, it makes living in the house harder, and it takes a whole lot more energy to get to the stuff that you're frequently using all the time, because you have to do four steps in front of it to do it. That's annoying. And then I think it increases your risk of injury, because you are you're like doubling the amount of work that you have to do something you want to do by having to move things around to get to what you want. And most of the time that means moving something out of the way, getting the thing that you want, using it, putting that thing back, and then moving the things that were in the way back in the way. And so you have to like rearrange, shuffle around, all that kind of stuff. And it doubles or triples the amount of work that you have to do, which means you're lifting more, you're shifting more, and the possibility that you can get hurt, I think, is increased in that situation. And for me, it's just that much more annoying. It affects my mental health because it's so annoying. Okay, 22 of you said, clutter in the room prevents you from having visitors. This is a mental health thing for me. If clutter is preventing you from being in the room, then from having people come into the room with you, if your space is not public friendly, then I think your mental health is affected by lack of social interaction. And I think those visitor check-ins, people that regularly come to the house, are the people that are checking in to make sure that you're okay. They can tell when something's different. Like, they're the ones that have the outsider point of view about how you're doing and how well you're doing. And so they can notice if something is off, if you're struggling, if you're having trouble. And if you don't have visitors coming, then there's no one to see that and to check in. And so I think it's super important to at least create one space where you're happy to have visitors come in and to continue to have that social interaction with your life. I think that just enriches your quality of life, and it's totally worth the effort to clear out at least one space where people can come and see you and check on and make sure that you're healthy and well.
Isolation is both a symptom and a contributing factor in anxiety and depression. And so you can kind of set up a negative feedback loop by your clutter makes you isolate yourself, and then you feel depressed or anxious, and you stop taking care to reduce your clutter. That problem gets worse, may contribute to deepening the depression and raising the anxiety level. Mm-hmm. So
isolation is never, I mean, there's all kinds of reason and science why, as human beings, isolation is never healthy and well. It's never good for you. So anything that you can do to improve that would be just to the betterment of your life all the way around, right?
While we're paused, Creative Planet Janet says, I finally realized why I hate putting dishes away. My kitchen is so small, and to fit everything in the cupboards is like putting a puzzle together.
And how annoying is that, right?
So we feel her pain.
Right? Doing Tetris to put the dishes up every day. And, you know, it's not like you're working in the kitchen once a week. You got to do that several times a day. And the dishes that you create today have to be washed and put up at probably once a day at least. And how annoying when you have to do Tetris to put it all away. That's just, that's just a recipe for being irritated. So if you're struggling with that every day, then that means that's a room that needs your decluttering attention, that and it's going to impact you immediately. It's going to change how you function in the kitchen immediately if you can go in there and, you know, make sure that you're not keeping stuff that you don't need to have, that you can get rid of things that are in your way, or redesign the layout so that the stuff that you want to put away all the time is easy to put away. If you find it hard, there's more, you got more than you can handle in there. And that's one of the downsides of being in a small space. The space is finite. It can only hold so much. And so when you have a small space, you don't have the room for as many options as you do in a larger space. And people are loath to give up their options, their opportunities, their possibilities. They don't like restricting their possibilities. But all of the possibilities on the spectrum are probably not going to get done. And you're probably not going to ever have to realize all those possibilities. And in the meantime, you have to live in that small space every day. And so trying to reduce the contents down to the most likely possibilities and living with that so that your day-to-day life can be easier and putting things away can be easier is an important shift in thinking around when you live in a small space. You just can't have as many possibilities in a finite, smaller box than you can in a much bigger box. And so it means you have to make more hard decisions. It means you have to have things that can serve multiple purposes. This is where you get into the, you don't want a kitchen item that only has one purpose in its life, because you don't have room in a small kitchen for an appliance that only does one thing. So keeping the appliances and the tools that serve multiple functions and letting go of all of the extras are how you survive in a smaller kitchen without, you know, wanting to kill yourself, because it's so hard to put things away. And because you're, you know, you can't make the house bigger than it is, you got to work with the space you got. So if you have a big kitchen, great. You can have more possibilities. You can have more appliances. It, you know, to me, that just means that you've got more things to wade through, but you will always be limited by whatever small space you have. That small space is always going to dictate how many possibilities you can have. And trying to have all the possibilities in a smaller space just means that you are crowded out of your smaller space quickly.
Well, and you, by trying to keep all of the possibilities open, no matter how large your space is, eventually you have so much stuff that you've foreclosed all of those things. You don't have time. You don't have the space to do the projects or play with the stuff or enjoy the stuff, because you've given all of your space to possibilities that you're not, that you don't have room to indulge in.
It is a thing about when you keep more than you can manage, when you keep more than will fit, then you're eating away at your living space and converting it to storage space. And if you're already in a small kitchen, you need what available surfaces and spaces there are to work. You can't use those very precious small spaces for storage. They need to be working surface. And so it's just it's the hazard of a small space is what I'm trying to say here. You're always going to have to fight. I want 37 possibilities, but my kitchen is small, and you can't. You can only have 10. That's the bottom line.
I would love to hear from the people who are with us live in Zoom or Facebook. If you answered that question, if you checked that answer that you have to move things to get to other frequently used items, I'd love to hear what the things blocking access are. Are they more frequently used items? Or I kind of want to hear, you know, how do you rationalize that? How do you arrive at that situation?
Okay.
We'll see if we get answers to that.
Okay. 20 of you said that papers are stacked in loose piles that are more than an inch high. Papers. Papers are, to me, are an ultimate hazard in the house, because those loose piles that, you know, once they start to be tall enough A, you've completely lost control of what's in the piles at that point. And B, the potential that they're going to fall over and be on the floor for you to step on, or more likely for you to slip on, is super high. And so you're going to knock those piles over, and then you're going to step on them and slip. Paper on carpet, God forbid, paper on carpet is like, it's like you step on skis when you step on the paper. Like, as long as you're super comfortable and careful, you can step through papers and not slip around. But the likelihood is, if you lose attention for a second, those two pieces of paper are going to slide against each other. The paper is going to slide against the tile floor or the carpet, and you are going to be sailing through the air and on the ground somewhere. And you're going to be grabbing things on the way by. You're going to be trying to break your fall. Other things are going to fall down the way. And it's just a recipe for disaster. And then I also think about people trying to come into your house. That whole the EMTs have to get in thing is a real problem. And I have this visual in my head, and I'll talk about the next one. But loose paper stacked up are unstable, just like the piles of randomly stacked things on the floor, right? And the result is that those unstable piles of paper, they're loose, they fall over, they end up on the floor. And whatever work you've done to make those piles be logically stacked, things linked together, you know, if you've done any organizing work in the pile, then, you know, once the paper falls on the floor, that's all out the window. So you're going to lose your hard work that you've done to make those piles make sense. And then you're going to step on something and fall. And we don't want you to be falling off. That's, you know, falling over is bad. So 17 of you said there are things that you have to step on or over as you move around your place. So, which is why I waited until this one. So the items that you have to step on or over as you move around the house are a huge tripping hazard. So you have a big fall risk here. And papers are one of those things that you might have to step over or around. But there could be other things, the items that you have stacked, things that you have in the pathways. They make the possibility that if you have to step up over something, I don't know about you, but I'm not 20 anymore. And the whole stepping over thing, yeah, I feel like I'm taking my life in my hands when I try to do that. I'm pretty sure that's the slightest thing, I'm going to end up on my, you know, on the ground. So you have to be super careful when you're trying to do all that stepping over stuff. And then it also has this added hazard of, it makes it really hard to quickly exit your house. So if you're in an emergency and you're having to step over and around on top of things to get out of the house, A, you're going to be in a rush. And then there's all these things to step over to get out of the house. It's going to slow you down and increase the possibility you're going to fall on the way out the door. So not a good setup for you to get out of the house quickly if you're having to climb over stuff or walk around stuff to get out. And on the flip side, if you are in the house and you need an EMT to come in, I don't know about you, but the EMTs come with a huge gurney that weighs like 90 pounds empty. And then they come with bags of gear because they're coming in with all of these machines that they can, you know, do things to you with while you're there. And so they come in with a massive amount of equipment. And if you have a bunch of things that you're having to step over and walk around, then any EMT that's coming in is 100% going to have to get over it with a gurney and gear bags. And the likelihood that they're going to knock over stuff or they're going to create hazards is pretty high. And then it's going to slow them down getting to you too. Like, it's going to make it super hard. I once had to direct an EMT to come into a building, and instead of just coming in directly because the doors were locked and I didn't have access to them, it was a public space, they had to go up a curving, you know, a set of stairs that turned at a landing and then go in and then come back down another set of stairs on the inside to get in. And it was excruciating to watch them try to get up and over and back down inside to get to the person that needed their help. And the whole time I'm like, hurry, 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 hurry. And just like they were doing the best that they could. And it was a complete, impediment to them providing the service. And if you are, if you are already having to step through narrow spaces or climbing over stuff that's in the way, then any EMT is going to have a doubly hard time getting to you and then getting back out. And the story that I want to tell is, I had a client who has now passed away, who I came to her because she had a medical emergency. And in that medical emergency, they came to her one bedroom condo, and they were able to go through the front door. And they narrowly walked through this very narrow pathway to get around to her, but they couldn't take her out the same way. And so they had to basically knock out the window and lift her out the window to get her out of the apartment. And because they couldn't do it in reverse with her on the gurney, they were able to lift and maneuver the gurney in the air to get it past all the impediments in the apartment. But then once she was on the gurney, they couldn't do that to get back out. And so they took her out the window. And I can't even imagine how long that slowed them up, how much time that added to their ability to rescue her and get her to the care that she needed. And I got called in because the doctor needed her to come home with a walker, and she couldn't get a walker into the house. The pathways were too narrow for a walker. And so they wouldn't let her come home without being able to maneuver the walker. And that's how I got involved, was clearing the space so the walker could come home. You don't think about these things as you actually have to do them. And then you can't get out of your house, or the EMTs can't get you out of the house because the stuff is in the way. So just something to consider. It's never an issue till the minute it's an issue. So the next thing, 15 of you and then 9 of you reported items blocking access to opening a window and items blocking an interior passage or door. So if you're blocking access to a window, or you're blocking the interior passageways, like if you've got a lot of stuff in the hallway, or you have a lot of stuff on the sides of the stair, for instance, then blocking the doorways. I know people get used to, they come in the same kind of house all the time. Like they come in the same door all the time to come into the house, or they always come from the car through the garage door into the house. And so then they start blocking other stuff. And so having those passageways in your regular daily life become, that's a normal process, right? You get used to it working that way. And then you end up with, you just sort of accept that those things are blocked. But if you then are in an emergency, you may not be able to go out the same way that you came in. It may not be a possibility that you can get to the door that you always go when you're doing it. And so if there's fire in another part of the house and the door that you normally go to is over there, then you have to be able to run and go out a different door. And if the window's blocked, if the door is blocked, then suddenly you are stuck. So paying attention to your all of the access points of the house and making sure that you can get in and out of everything that you need to be able to do in an emergency would be super helpful. And it would provide alternative access for EMTs to come to you as well. If they can't get through the front door, they can come through another door and get to you if they need to help you get out. And I think that having those things block all the extra stuff on the stairwell, for instance, on the staircase or on the landings of the staircase, those things get in the way if you have a mobility issue. If you're using an appliance, if you have to use a cane or a crutch, or you're trying to use a walker, then having those things block the pathways and block the movement in between the areas makes it difficult for you to move around. You got to have more space rather than less space if you have mobility issues, or if you're using appliances to help yourself move around. So making those pathways clear for you so that you can safely get around. Because if you're already using a cane or a walker and then you fall down on top of it, you're just making it harder for yourself, right? You have to be extra careful when you have mobility issues. So clearing up that is important. so that you can get around safely and not be so difficult, have it not be such a life-threatening event. Okay, 14 of you said that rugs or carpets can't be vacuumed regularly due to clutter. And I'm assuming that this is either because stuff is sitting on top of them. So you've stacked things on the rugs or the carpets, and it makes it hard to move around. And so that's going to affect your air quality, right? Like if you can't vacuum, then you're accumulating dirt and dust in the rugs and the carpets, and that affects the air quality and the cleanliness of the house. And that's all going to be affecting your health. And sometimes, you know, it might be creating some tripping hazards as well. So paying attention to the rugs and carpets and being able to vacuum them, it's a good goal to aim for sure. 14 people say items impede your movement within the house. And so again, we talked about this, tripping and falling hazards, EMS can't get to you hazards. Addressing those for your safety and well-being is an important first step to make for sure. In terms of safety, I mean, if you are trying to address what's the most important for you being in the house, I think being able to make free movement in whatever capacity, whatever your ability is to move around, making that happen should be number one priority. 12 of you said that you have items stored in the oven. The items stored in the oven thing, that one is just like, oh my God, what is happening about the items stored in the oven? I get it that it's a cabinet. An oven is in its bare essence, it's a cabinet, right? It's a box with a door. So, and it has racks and it has shelves. So I get that it makes sense that you, you know, think of it maybe as a box, but then if you go to turn on the oven, then everything in the oven is going to get hot. Or every time you want to use the oven, you have to empty the oven in order to use it. And so I just find it fascinating that people default to using the oven as a storage box.
Well, and the argument that we occasionally hear is, well, I never bake. I don't use my oven. So it makes it a useful storage space. The danger there is someone visiting your home might not realize that you never bake, and they go in and turn on the oven to preheat because they're going to do something. They came to your house with their casserole and they're going to put it in the oven.
Right.
And then of course you might have an oven that it's easy to turn on by accident. I have one of those.
Oh, really? Why?
The controls are on an electronic panel on the front, and it's just very easy. Like I turn on something on that control panel anytime I try to just wipe it clean. So I can wipe it clean, and the next thing I have to do is hit cancel on whatever has been activated.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's a funny, I mean, and I get, you know, it's an extra cabinet in a small kitchen, right? Like it's space that seems ripe to be used, but I wouldn't overstuff it at all. Like I would not put 15 things in there. If you have to store things in an oven, then I would really try to look for an alternative solution. Anything that has a handle on it, I'd try to hang up on the wall if you could, like adding a pot rack or adding hooks on the wall so that you can hang things on the wall, anything to get it out of the oven. I just think that it creates a potential for a fire hazard, and that's all well and good while you still have all of your faculties. But if you start to get a little forgetful or having issues remembering that there's something in there, you might like turn on the oven without remembering that it's full of stuff. And then you go in there and suddenly it's an issue. It's something else to deal with. So
several people mentioned in the chat that that's where they like to keep their cast iron stuff. And
okay.
Yeah. And
the cast iron stuff is heavy, man. Every time you have to move the cast iron stuff, that's a lot to move around and weight.
Well, and also if you accidentally turn the oven on, or someone else accidentally turns the oven on, and it runs for just, you know, just preheats for a few minutes longer than you're paying attention, you can completely destroy the seasoning on your cast iron pans by getting them too hot.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What's too hot? Like
400 degrees for 5 minutes will do a lot of damage to the to seasoning on cast iron.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Oh, fascinating. Yeah.
You can't just heat it indefinitely with nothing in it. The danger of heating it with nothing in it is that that surface will start to burn off.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't know that. See, this is the, you know, the non-cook who doesn't know this kind of stuff. That's amazing. Well, and yeah, I mean, and the biggest thing is sometimes people store non-kitchen things in the oven, like, or they'll put plastic in the oven, or they'll put something that can catch on fire. And that is the part that is the most risky, right? Like you accidentally turn on an oven or without thinking you turn it on, and then there's stuff inside the oven that is going to catch on fire. And then what do you do? So it does make me nervous that people use the oven as a storage box. I just think of it as like, it's just a hot box to me. Like that's just a hot box. And no matter what happens, it's going to, you know, it's going to be hot. And so it shouldn't have stuff in it. That's the bottom line. Okay. Other people have said, 11 people have said that the lighting is inadequate for ease of motion at night. So that is, that's like everybody gets up in the night to use the bathroom, to go change the temperature of the AC. I need a glass of water. Like you get up in the dark and then you need to move around. And I've just heard so many stories about people falling in the dark, running into things in the dark, tripping in the dark, the animals moving, and you can't see the animals moving in the dark. And so then you don't know they're underfoot and you trip on them and fall. And being able to adequately light your way while you're moving around in the dark, I think is super important. And it, the risk of falling there and getting injured is pretty high if you don't manage that. So if you think it's inadequate for people to move around, then fix it. A, we don't want you falling down. And then think of your guests. Like part of the reason that you can move around in the dark in your house is because you're very, very familiar with where everything is. You know exactly that the chair is over there and that there's something next to that doorway and that light switch is over here. You know where to move around and touch things in the dark to get to navigate better than anyone. But if you have a guest, the guest isn't going to have any idea at all. And so that is that's a recipe for someone else in your house to get injured if they can't move around in the dark. So
yeah. And then the additional liability there is that you get a great big lawsuit that drives up your insurance, your homeowner's insurance, or results in an enormous settlement and so on and so forth. All right. We are just about out of time. So
we are. Sorry.
Let's talk for just a moment about next week. We don't have a topic ready to announce, but we will be back next week, Tuesday, August 8th at the usual time, noon U.S. Central Time. And watch your email tomorrow for announcement of the topic. Gail, why don't you give us the tittle?
Okay, this week's tittle is Make Your Home a Little Safer. This week's assignment is to focus on clutter dangers in your home and then to take an action to improve those issues. So accomplish this week's task, we'd like to for you to address the first item on the following list that applies to your situation. And for extra credit, you can keep going down the list until you've completed them all. So you can pick clear access to all of the exits from your home. Remove anything that would prevent you using any door or window as an escape route in an emergency. That's one option. The second option is if your exit routes are already clear, focus on removing any obstructions on the floor that make it difficult to move freely around the house. And if the floors are free and clear already, then you can focus on making sure that the location of your fire extinguisher offers quick and easy access in case of a fire. And it would also be a good time to check the condition and the recommended replacement date of the fire extinguisher. They do expire and they need to be recharged. So, and then if you don't have a fire extinguisher, you might want to go get one. And if your fire extinguisher is in good condition and easily accessed, then your assignment for this week is to read the instructions to familiarize yourself with how the fire extinguisher works, because that's true. I don't know that I would know how to make a fire extinguisher work in a hurry. I would have to be reading instructions as the fire burns. So good reminder. I think that's a very good reminder. So you can do any or all of those if you feel so inclined, and we will look forward to hearing from you next week about it.
All right. If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so keep those comments and questions and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you every week, and we will be back next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.